This is Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, a podcast presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. Now, most any modern musical style can trace its roots back to the blues. Time Signatures explores the blues and its musical connections with captivating interviews, lively discussions, and news from the world of blues.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up and down these Michigan roads, yeah.
And now, here he is, your host, Jim Irvin.
Baby, I'm home.
Who you got today, Jim?
Well, hello there and welcome. And thank you, Big Lou. I'm your host, Jim Irvin, and this is Time Signatures. Today's guest is a veteran of the D.C. music scene for more than 35 years. His music has evolved from the early days as lead guitarist for the psychedelic rock band The Next Step to being one half of the Reale Brothers of the 1990s and then on to a solo career. His proficiency in both the Delta as well as the Piedmont blues has earned him critical acclaim, and he has appeared twice at the International Blues Challenge in Memphis in 2010 and 2011. Ladies and gentlemen, Reale Records recording artist and a man on a new mission. Oh, yeah, we're going to talk about that in a minute. J.P. Reale, welcome to Time Signatures. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Jim. Thanks for having me.
And you look like you're relaxing, man. Are you on some kind of a vacation?
Yeah, I'm in Southern Virginia on a lake, and I just came up from the lake to do a little fishing. Didn't catch anything because, you know, Even blues men need to take a little break every now and then.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, even a bad day of fishing is better than a good day at work, isn't it?
I tell myself that all the time, and I didn't catch anything today. I had a couple of bites, and sitting on the edge of the dock, and I was starting to pack my stuff up to get ready to clean up to come here to do this interview, and this probably 3-foot pike, I don't know what kind of fish it was, kind of comes up to the surface and shows itself.
Oh, man.
So I scrambled to get another lure on, and I got it to chase the bait, and he hit it, but he didn't bite the hook.
Oh, so, man. Well, hopefully you can get him there. Maybe that's Catfish Hunter from Grumpy Old Men.
Yeah, right.
Well, JP, as some may have surmised, you do have a new album to talk about, and I promise we're going to talk about that. But I would love to learn a little bit more about you beforehand. Talk about your earliest memories of music.
Sure. So I grew up in a very musical home. My parents met in Queens College in 1957. Obviously, a lot of really amazing music coming out of the United States in that late 1950s era. And my father always loved rhythm and blues, particularly Fats Domino and Little Richard, and my mom loved Chuck Berry and Johnny Cash and Elvis and Jerry Lee Lewis, all the Sun Records guys. And we had a nice console stereo, and I would sit in an old rocking chair when I was a wee little kid and just play records and rock back and forth. And I'm also a middle child. I have an older sister and a younger brother, and we're all musicians. And my sister was taking piano lessons, and when I was about 5, they tried to give me lessons, and I was too little. I can remember sitting on the piano stool. We had an old spinet piano, and my feet couldn't touch the ground. And I was like, well, my parents thought, yeah, it was too young. And in fact, the teacher was the local priest, which was a fairly common thing back then. This was around 1970.
Okay.
And always had music on in the house. My parents sang in the church choir. And when I was 10, the summer after fourth grade, I took a saxophone lessons in a class from a public school. But I always knew that I was going to play guitar. There was just something inside my brain. I always knew that I was always attracted to guitar, even though the first album I ever got was Elton John's Greatest Hits.
Oh, wow.
Obviously, he was a piano player, but
sure.
Davy Johnstone was a fantastic guitar player in his band. I think he's still in his band. And I just loved that early 50s rock stuff. Chuck Berry, my mother had a lot of Chuck Berry records, but she also had Rock Around the Clock by Bill Haley and the Comets.
Yes.
And that was just magical to me. And I said, someday I'm going to need to learn how to do that. That's where it all began.
That's really cool, man. Now, who were some of your biggest influences when you were growing up? I mean, I know you mentioned a few, but who influenced you the most as you were coming up with the guitar?
Well, I, like a lot of suburban white kids, I first got exposed to the blues through the English bands. My sister was a huge Beatles fan, which meant that wasn't something that I was going to get into. But, you know, I would hear it and some of their later stuff, early stuff, obviously, too. But For You Blue, I think it was on Let It Be. My sister had that one and heard the Rolling Stones, heard Eric Clapton, even Jimi Hendrix. But it was really the thing that really caught my attention was Jim Croce's Bad, Bad Leroy Brown. It was the Barrel House piano introduction. I didn't know what it was about it that I loved, but I knew I loved it.
Wow. And you and I have got to be very close in age. I just turned 61 in April, but I'm guessing you're close.
I turned 61 in May.
There you go. So I'm just a tiny bit older than you. But as you're describing the music, I'm going,
Yeah.
But JP, at what age did you figure out that life and music was in the cards for you? It was there.
It was probably ninth grade. I remember this. I have a very strong memory. The last day of eighth grade in 1979 was probably the third week in June. I'm sure I could look it up and find out. And I grew up on this little sailing village on the North Shore of Long Island. And my parents had a little sailboat, little Sunfish. And I had some friends and we used to go sailing all the time. And we got out of school like a half day early, and the girls had their bikinis on underneath their jeans, and five or six of us guys said, hey, we're all going down to the beach to go sailing. You want to come with us? And I said, no, I have a guitar lesson today. And they said, oh, we didn't know you played guitar. And I said, well, today's my first lesson. And as I started high school a few months later, I became obsessed with guitar. And I knew that that's what I wanted to do with my life. I didn't know if I was going to actually be able to make money at it. And I took lessons vigilantly once a week all 4 years in high school.
Wow.
And when I was a junior in high school, came time to start thinking about college. My older sister was in college. My younger brother, who was about 4.5 years younger than me, we were in elementary school together, but never junior high or high school. He was a really good student, and I wasn't, because I goofed off a lot. And
again, more ties.
Yeah.
Now, we teased the psychedelic band, so let's hear about it. How old were you and how long did you play with the band?
So I left for college in August of 1983 for freshman orientation week. And I met someone who we're still friends, Jim Larson, drummer and producer of this album. And he was from Media, Pennsylvania, which is a suburb of Philly.
Okay.
So we had a lot in common, East Coast people, and we talked about starting a band, and we were not roommates the first semester. We moved in together the second semester, and he was the one that really opened up the door to the Grateful Dead for me, because he had two older brothers, and he knew all about
the
Grateful Dead hotline, and we had talked about starting a band, and we decided the next year when we came back for our sophomore year, we were going to start a band, and that's exactly what we did.
How cool is that? And then how long were you with the band totally?
So I played in the band from October of 84 to June of 91.
Oh, wow.
So about 7 years.
Yeah.
And we did the whole thing. We had a band house. We had everybody lived it. I dropped out of school. Jim stayed in school. He was always a better student than me. And I just got a job. I got a job as a dishwasher in a restaurant because it was in the winter. I dropped out after my first semester of our second year. I took a leave of absence.
From there, you went to the Reale Brothers. You formed a band with your brother. I would love to hear about this band. And what caused that move? Was it expansion and growth, curiosity, maybe some maturity that came into play? What caused this?
Well, so I had been playing with the Next Step, and I had left. I dropped out of the band my last semester, which ended up being the spring of 1988. And so I dropped out of the band, and then later that summer, when after I graduated, they begged me to come back, so I came back. And we had a really good 2 years or so, maybe 18 months. By the spring of 1990, we had stopped rehearsing. We had a couple of weekly gigs, which were great. I graduated, had a day job, but it's not easy, right? We were playing every Wednesday and Thursday, Wednesday night at a bar in Baltimore and Thursday night in a bar in DC, and then sometimes Friday and Saturday. And the money, you know, was 40 or 50 bucks, you know, was, I guess it was five of us by then. We had added a keyboard player, and it just started to get really old. And I got a new day job, and I was, my friendships and relationships were suffering because I was working all the time. And if I wasn't working, I was at a gig or driving to or from a gig and staying up late drinking.
I need to turn the page here. Okay. Because we need to talk about your solo career. Solo releases, The Road to Mississippi in 2012, A Highway Cruise in 2019, and your 2024 studio release, Blues Since Birth, an album, by the way, that reached number one on the Roots Music Report Top 50 Blues Rock Album Chart October 19th of 2024. It seems as though you were quietly, or maybe not so quietly, kind of making your moves along the way, establishing yourself, correct?
Yeah, that's exactly what I ended up doing. And I moved back to Washington, D.C., because, of course, when we came back to New York in 1992, a female friend of mine from D.C. I had stayed in touch with, and she called me out of the blue and said, "Hey, I'm coming up for the Bob Dylan 30th anniversary concert at Madison Square Garden. I got an extra ticket. You want to go?" And I said, "Sure, you can come." And so my brother and I, we came back from Japan. He gave up his apartment in the East Village, and we ended up moving into an apartment in Queens because it was like a fraction of the cost of living in Manhattan. And so we decided we were going to try to go for as long as we can on all the money we made and saved while we're in Japan. And so fall of 92, I start dating a woman who lives in D.C. So I start going back and forth to D.C. every other weekend, which would bear musical fruit for me, because when we finally decided we wanted to have a relationship, it started out as a friendship, started to grow more. We were both cautious of friends with benefits. I don't want to ruin the friendship, but I'm really attracted to you. Feeling was mutual. We decided we wanted to go that direction. I wrote a song on the train home from, actually we met in, she was from South Jersey, and we met at a beach in New Jersey in January of 83. And I rode the bus. I think she picked me up in Atlantic City. And on the way home, I wrote these lyrics. I just wrote like all this emotion. And I came home, and this is an interesting story. Someone had given my brother an old, cheap, silver tone archtop guitar. Silver tone was the Sears brand. And sure, it was all banged up, and the neck was off, and he tried to put it back together. And that weekend, that while I was away, that's what he did. And I came home, he said, "Hey, I got the silver tone back together. I put strings on it, but I tuned it a whole step down because I don't think the neck can take the full pressure from the tension of the strings." I said, "Okay." He handed it to me, and I picked it up, and it just started playing this finger-picking groove, and it became my song Cold Steel Blues.
Wow.
That I recorded on the Road to Mississippi album, but a different version than the original one that I had written. And because my brother and I made an album in 2005 that we self-released, and we used that, the original version of Cold Steel Blues, but I always felt that it never got the attention that I thought it deserved. So recorded again, Pete Ragusa, the drummer from the legendary DC band Nighthawks, said, "Hey, let's twist this one around a little bit." And we came up with this other version, which I thought was kind of cool. And then we revisited that song when we went to record Blues Since Birth. And it was Jim Larson, drummer producer said, hey, let's do something with this. But so my brother and I played a lot between 92 and 95 in New York City. We just didn't make a lot of money. And I ended up having to get a job. We both ended up having to get day jobs. And I have a friend whose sister was married to a union stagehand. He was he worked on the TV show Saturday Night Live. And I called him.
A TV show, right?
He said, hey, go down to Studio Instrument Rentals, also known as SIR, and said, they're always looking for people. And I walked in there, and they needed a sound engineer. It was a rehearsal studio and rental space. And I got a job there and started working, and started out working weekends and then weekday nights, and then eventually got to weekday days. And my brother and I were still playing, but it kind of wasn't happening anymore. And we were, I mean, I'm not afraid to say that I was not the best singer then. My vocals have improved tremendously since then.
Okay.
And my brother was a great songwriter, and we just, that's kind of when the acoustic revival really began. And we had some small label in New Jersey interested in us, but they wanted to produce us as a band, and that's not what we wanted to do. So nothing really ever came of it, and I was in this really intense relationship. And I always knew that I was never going to stay in New York forever.
Yes, indeed. The new EP is called Grateful Blues. It is labeled as a tribute and expression of your passion for the Grateful Dead. So deep is your passion, in fact, that the album is, quote, the culmination of dozens upon dozens of Dead shows in the 1980s. That's some kind of commitment and passion, JP.
Yeah, well, it goes hand in hand with my lack of excellence in my scholastic career, right? Because I remember that my first semester of my sophomore year was the worst academically I did, because I went to 11 of 14 Dead shows on the East Coast tour that October.
Wow.
And came back to my calculus class, and the teacher had changed the syllabus around, so I thought I was coming back the week before the midterm test, but I came back, it was to the day of the midterm test. I went, oh, this is going to be bad. Because I didn't bring any books. You know, I learned from the previous year, yeah, we'll bring some school books on Dead tour. We're going away for the weekend to see three shows, and maybe I'll read in the car. Nope.
Now, according to your website, the songs that you selected, the Dead Nuggets, were selected by you, each reimagined in your own vernacular, as it says. But I wanted to ask you the question, why did you choose these particular songs? Was there a theme involved there? Because as I told you from the beginning, I'm not a Deadhead. I'm very, very new. Thanks to your EP, this is the biggest exposure that I've had to the Grateful Dead in a chunk. But what caused you to choose these particular songs?
Well, that's a great question. We started out with about a dozen songs, and I wanted it to be original songs. And the plan was originally to record that album this summer. And I was going to, a year ago, I was, so back up one second here. The 2019 sure. album, A Highway Cruise, I made with my longtime friend Duke Levine and a bunch of his musical friends from Boston. And I wanted to go back up there. He was friends with a great studio owner named Chris Rival, owns a place called Middleville Studios in Middleville, Massachusetts. Fantastic guy. He's 6 or 7 years older than me. He's been a studio owner since the 70s, been buying and selling gear, has every amazing guitar, vintage amp, vintage recording gear. And we were going to go up there to record when Chris Rival decided he was going to retire. So I had originally picked 12 songs, and this was going to be a full album.
Okay.
Because the band was going to be a big band. It was going to be three guitars, piano, bass, and drums.
Wow.
And one of the guitars was going to be a steel guitar player, which is what the format of the band was on A Highway Cruise. So that was a big blow. And I thought, okay, well, there are other studios up there. It's really about the players. Although one of the things I've learned over 40 years of spending time in recording studios is that the studio and the personnel in the room absolutely have an impact on the final product. So that was kind of a big blow. And then an album came out last fall, I think it was, Luther Dickinson.
No, you're okay.
Came out with an album called Dead Blues. And
yes.
I heard about it. I went, oh, God, my heart sank.
Oh.
And I thought, oh, no, somebody stole my idea. And I looked up, and I am not in that league yet, I hope, with him. He's a Grammy Award-winning guitar player. So he's got big-time people behind him, I guess. And I looked it up, and it was all cover songs that the Dead used to do, like Good Morning, Little Schoolgirl, and all the old, and Smokestack Lightning and all the Chess record stuff that they started out recording when they were starting out as a band. And I said, okay, we got to get on this sooner than later. So we booked time. I said, all right, you know what? We're just going to do it here at a studio in Philadelphia. And we're just going to do it as a four piece. And I have a bass player that I've been working with. And I made some phone calls and found a great keyboard player. So we went to Turtle Studios in South Philly for a couple days in January or early this year. And it was, the time was already booked. And I think it was actually one of the days we were in the studio was the day Bob Weir actually died.
Oh, man.
So that was, I was literally saw a friend post something on social media about RIP Bob Weir. And he's connected to that scene, let's just say.
Yeah.
And I texted him, said, is this true? He said, yeah, Bob just died today. I didn't know if they announced it, but he was diagnosed with cancer a year ago. And that's what he died because of complications from the treatment.
Okay.
Whatever, you know, that means. So yeah. it was serendipitous that on some level that I was singing I Need a Miracle. So we whittled it down thinking, okay, well, the first thing I thought was when the Boston thing fell through, okay, well, I just saved a bunch of money. So let's see, how can we trim this down to make it something that we can work on quickly and get out in the next 6 months? So I just whittled it down to the six songs that I really liked. And really the six songs that I picked, these are definitely songs that I want to do. And it was the six songs on the album, Easy Wind, I didn't bring a copy of it with me. So it's Easy Wind, I Need a Miracle, West LA Fade Away, Mr. Charlie, Loose Lucy, and Tennessee Jed. And I had actually started to listen to some, I have all their albums except for the last two. I don't have In the Dark or Built to Last. And West LA Fade Away was on In the Dark, which was the album that had their big hit Touch of Grey. And I intentionally wanted songs that I could reinterpret. This is not about cloning the Grateful Dead. It's about pulling the nuggets of their music that were rooted in blues. Watering the seeds that were planted, seeds of the blues that are in their music, and watering them to showcase how bluesy their music actually is.
Once again, the EP is called Grateful Blues. Now, JP, tell us where we can learn more about you, as well as where they can get a copy of this new music and maybe some of your other work, which, by the way, is also straight up good stuff, or to book you for a gig.
Well, you can find out more information on my website, jpreale.com. If you want to buy a CD, you can buy a CD, a physical CD that I will sign and mail to you from my website. It's $10 for the CD. I think I put shipping at $3 or $4. So I think it's $14 for the whole thing. That includes shipping to the continental U.S., overseas shipping. We'll figure it out as we go.
I want to thank you for your time today and for coming on to join me on Time Signatures. Please give my best to Barry and also to your loving wife for allowing you to do this while you're on vacation. I genuinely appreciate that. And give Barry my personal thanks for the opportunity to meet and interview you, because this has been a lot of fun. It really has. As I said, I'm looking forward to keeping an eye on this EP to see where it goes. And if I can, let me echo what JP has already said. Do me a favor and please go out and at least buy the download. if you're a physical guy like, you know, myself and so many others out there, I've got a bunch of vinyl over here to my left. I've got 1,600 CDs across the room from me. Trust me, I have a nice collection. But it doesn't take much. And think about this, guys. If you like live music, the best way to support it is to go out before you stream and at least buy a download, okay? That's what I do. That's part of what I, that's part of my mission, is to try to bring people, make sure that they're cognizant of that. And that wraps up this edition of Time Signatures. Once again, my thanks to our guest, JP Reale, but also to you, for without you, none of this would be possible. Jim Riven reminding you, keeping the blues alive is everyone's responsibility, but preserving the history of the blues one story at a time, that's my mission. Until next time, so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. Now, for more information about CABS, visit capitalareablues.org. The Time Signatures theme song, Michigan Roads, is used by permission and was written by Root Doctor, featuring Freddie Cunningham. You can find this episode and past episodes of Time Signatures at lccconnect.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, keep on keeping the blues alive.
Baby, I'm home.
Ooh, shuggy ducky.